Hi folks, Dre Harrison here from Motorsport 101. Just to let you know that we recorded this episode before this morning's tragic news that Eddie Jordan has passed away at the age of 76. We'll talk about him in a bit more detail on next week's episode, but I wanted to send a few words in here. Eddie Jordan was, in my opinion, a true rock star. From the way he hustled and ground his way into Formula One with Jordan, he truly did things his way. He was never afraid to gamble. He was never afraid to take a chance. He even famously offered Ayrton Senna 50% of his team just to get him to join. He was that passionate and enthusiastic about the sport, being a part of the sport, and the passion and time and dedication he brought to people. There's people in that Aston Martin get up that are still there from when Eddie Jordan originally hired them back in 1991, which is crazy to even think about. But as much as I didn't know Eddie, it felt like you knew him, especially when he transitioned towards being a TV presenter and pundit in the later forms of his life. Yes, he didn't get every prediction spot on, but he got it in terms of being a great entertainer and a lover of life. And he absolutely brought it to everything he put his mind to, from his wonderful time as a BBC F1 pundit to his brief spell on Top Gear. You always were in for a good time when Eddie Jordan was around, and that is why he will be so sadly missed amongst the paddock and beyond. Rest peacefully, Eddie, and race on. This one's for you.
Welcome to the Ferrari Therapy Lost Copium session. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
And really, what were any of you expecting? I mean, y'all are new to this, aren't you?
First time.
Let me educate you. This is what Sebastian Vettel had to deal with all those years.
First time. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Motorsport 101, episode 500. Nice. I am your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. And well, it's the one you've all been waiting for. It's the one you're all here for. Formula One's 2025 season opener at the Australian Grand Prix. And well, in the least surprising part of all this, Lando Norris won. The favorite did actually come through. He had to earn it, though. That was not a straightforward McLaren win, because are they ever these days? We'll talk all about that. The battle for the win between him and Max Verstappen, just 0.8 of a second behind. And Oscar Piastri, who was challenging for a podium until he very suddenly wasn't. You probably have already heard the dulcet tones of New Hampshire's finest, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
Everything went red for 12 hours. Woke up respecting the bumps. Oh, man, I did it again.
I forgot that the sports cars happened to him.
It was all right up in my face for an entire week.
And I'll joke on, who was actually at the IMSA 12 hours.
Yeah, copyright struck, idiot.
He's got a Rexine plush in front of us. How dare you? RJ, you were actually down there at IMSA for the 12 hours of Sebring. How was it, my friend?
It was really great just soaking in like another slice of history, because in 2025, Nick Tandy has decided to just complete his new game plus run of sports car racing. He's won every major 24-hour race overall, and he has now won the traditional Triple Crown of endurance racing. By winning his first Sebring 12 hours overall, he was a class winner there three times in a row for 2018 to 2020. I find it funny that we're all looking forward to the potential of him winning at Sebring and joining a less exclusive club than the one he joined at Daytona, which is a club of just himself. And now it's just like, oh, it's a club of between 9 to 12 people, depending on whether or not you count the shorter predecessors of the Rolex 24 at Daytona as part of the Triple Crown. But yes, Nick Tandy is now the 10th driver to win the Triple Crown of endurance racing, joining the likes of Hans Herrmann, Jackie Oliver, Hurley Haywood, AJ Foyt, Al Holbert, Andy Wallace, Maribaldi, Marco Werner, and Timo Bernhard was the last to do it before Tandy did it. And if you want to include the shorter Daytona races, you could throw in Phil Hill, Dan Gurney, and Jackie X. his own company.
Yeah. He's basically doing the 100% speed run of all things sports car. And, I'm extremely here for it.
And you know what's crazy? Lawrence Vanthoor, could basically do his own, what was it called? The sloppy second slam. I believe it was coined in conversation.
What's the name?
If he wins Le Mans.
Yeah, because, depending if Porsche actually shows the hell up to Le Mans this year, I'm waiting, guys. Either the IMSA Plus One car could have both Tandy and Nasr complete the Triple Crown in 1 year, which has never happened thanks to Ford corporate meddling in 1966. No, it didn't play out like it did in the movie, but it was equally stupid in real life. Or Lawrence Vanthoor could do it because he's been the plus one in that car, but he's also one of the IMSA plus ones, one of the WEC regulars who's going to be running one of the other works Porsches. You know, it has to be said, bar this one, and mainly because Racing Bulls has no regard for my sanity. Other than that, this is one of the most successful racing weekends that I've ever had as a fan. Because Wood Brothers won in NASCAR.
Oh, yeah, game. That's right. Josh Berry won his first race in the Wood Brothers 21. That's to say, can I get back to a point that I was going to make? I was at the post-race press conference, and the realization with Tandy and Vanthoor realizing they were going to have to fight each other for that share of the Triple Crown in 1 year, and then Tandy puts his hand up Vanthor's shoulders, just like, sorry, bud.
Also potentially early Golden Melon nominees with Tandy's pass for the eventual win, and he is speeding towards the That Boy Nice Award this year.
Oh golly.
He and Felipe Nasr is so fucking good, man.
Yeah.
Plus the bikes. We'll talk about the bikes later, but I'm still feeling real good about my life right now.
Our bikes coming soon to a podcast near you. That'll be the next episode of Motorsport 101 right here. I've let these boys respectfully get Wood over the sports car racing. It's time for me to reinstall some control here on this show and talk about the horror show that was actually one of the better Formula One races of the last couple of years. As you do. Because apparently, all you need to do to add a little bit of drama to the Australian Grand Prix, the true season opener of Formula One, sorry, Bahrain, I love you, but not like that, is just make it the first wet race in 20 years in Australia. And look what happens. Oh, boy. All hell breaks loose. We'll talk about the battle for the lead, Oscar Piastri, and why you should never bet the mortgage on an Australian driver winning at home. Spoiler alert, it still hasn't happened yet, and I'm not sure it ever will.
They still haven't gotten a podium there, man.
Nope. Not even a home podium.
They got to celebrate one, but they didn't get to keep it in 2014.
Yeah, it was like, technically, Daniel Ricciardo did, briefly.
Couple hours.
And, you know, fuel flow limits and all that. They were fun. We'll talk about some of the crazy mid-level points performances here, because yes, one rookie had a great weekend, just about. The others, not so much. We'll talk about some of that as well. Ferrari, oh boy, the hype train has been derailed after one race. Not great at all.
You guys had a hype train?
It's Ferrari and Lewis Hamilton. Of course we had a fucking hype train.
So the train coming off the rails was even bigger and more spectacular.
Yes, it's like your favorite soap opera. The Brits will understand this reference. It's like Coronation Street when the CGI train came off the bridge. Yeah, that's the level of widespread explosion we're talking about here. So we'll talk about that and the rest of the rookie performances, because there was one that was great and the rest that, well, wasn't. One of them didn't even take the start line. Poor Isaac. All of that and more in the next hour or so. But of course, places you can find us first real quick. We are on youtube.com/ Motorsport101. You may have seen some shorts up there, go up there in the last couple of days or so. More of those in the coming days and weeks. Huzzah, huzzah. Facebook.com/Motorsport101, or on Twitter, Motorsport_101. If you want to follow us on Blue Sky personally, you can at CBuckley917, at RJ O'Connell, and at Dre Harrison at BSky.social. If you want to follow us on Instagram, you can at Motorsport101Pod. You can follow us on there. And if you all those details and more are on our website, motorsport101.com, including full race reviews from yours truly on both this race, the Australian Grand Prix, and the MotoGP's Grand Prix of Argentina, and one special post, which I'll talk about a little bit more later on in the show. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, which Jane Bleach upped her pledge to the $5 level. So thank you very much, Jane. Much appreciated. Thank you for all your support as ever. If you go up to the $10 level, you can also get into support. Let's go to our Discord server. We can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Emma and Jason are doing right now. Thanks for your support, guys. I love that Emma in our chat has also said, quickly looked up that Coronation Street clip because I had to. It's glorious. See? See? That was where the budget went. You can tell, can't you? Us Brits and our soap operas never change. Speaking of soap operas, here we go. After this quick musical break, let's talk about the 2025 Australian Grand Prix.
I was watching the start of this from the Sebring Media Room. I was just like crunching out all the deadline materials. It's like, oh yeah, F1 started. Things are already happening.
Yeah. It was a wet race in Australia. Of course, it ended up being chaotic and going down to the final lap. Lando Norris held the lead for the majority of the race, holding off a fast starting Max Verstappen in second and Oscar Piastri third. Until, of course, he overtook Max when Max ran just all four wheels off into a lake at the side of the road in Sector 3. Piastri was then told to hold off on attacking his teammate when he got to him before a safety car for Fernando Alonso crashing very high speed in the middle of the track opened up the door for slick tires. We then had another very sudden, quote, class three rain shit show with both McLarens going off the road, Lando Norris recovering and switching to wets, Oscar Piastri beached in the grass, and Max trying his hand to stay out in front, but ultimately had to pit for the same wet tires. He'd go on to finish ninth, Oscar Piastri, as Lando Norris holds off Max by a little under a second for career win number 5.
One more than his car number. All right, Dre, it's time for everybody's round one overreactions. We know what's going to happen after just one race in the 2024 F1 season. But the lead battle. New Norris, same old Mats. What do we think here? Because, like, it was close. There was an opportunity that Lando Norris could have played up to the stereotypes of being a bottle artist, but he didn't.
Yeah, what I would say to this is it's very easy to overreact and come up with big sweeping narratives after one round. I try not to fall into that trap. But at face value, that was an excellent drive from Lando Norris. Mm-hmm. That is exactly the sort of drive that I think he needed to have to reestablish himself. I mean, we just broke a 1,070-day streak. This is the first time since Spain 2022 that Max Verstappen is not leading a world championship.
Oh, shit.
Which is crazy. I think that was 63 races ago, just to put into perspective. And was Norris necessarily the quickest man out there? I'm not entirely convinced he was, but he held his nerve under pressure. He didn't blink. He didn't give his opponents an opportunity to beat him. He blocked Max well at the start. He took control of the race. Max goosed his tires trying to stay with him, and Oscar Piastri got close, but made an Oscar Piastri-esque mistake, unfortunately, and that's what opened the door for Norris to defend himself. Was it the perfect race in terms of execution? Probably not. Not quite. But I'm not sure Lando Norris wins this race 6 months ago. he did win this one. And that's a step in the right direction for Lando and McLaren in general. This was a good, well-executed race. Unfortunately, they were a little bit unlucky in how it ended for Oscar, but that was one of those spontaneous moments you couldn't really have done anything about. They got caught in the rain and then the first guys threw it. It can happen to anybody.
Lando caught the car. Oscar did not. And Lando got to pit. Oscar was using some skills learned on Jeremy Clarkson's farm to back that tractor out of the grass because the grass was completely saturated with water, and was able to recover to the points, but unfortunately, it just all kind of fell apart from there for him.
Should have been more, man. It really should have been more. Like, it should have been at least a podium finish for Oscar, if not the win. I know my lesson not to bet the mortgage on an Australian driver winning at home, because I was so tempted to. Should have at least been a podium.
Should have been at least second place. Oscar's pace was at his best was exceptional. If you ever want the narrative-driven race about Oscar Piastri, this was the one where a lot of people think, rightly or wrongly, he has a higher ceiling than Lando Norris does, and at very brief moments during this race, it looked like he did, but then Piastri made I don't want to say typical, but Piastri has had these errors before, and this one cost him dearly.
Well, he got told to hold station, and then just went out of his pace from there. I think it got him out of his rhythm, and then he just dropped it.
Turn six of poor judgment. It happens.
It happened to a few drivers. Fernando Alonso. Yikes.
Oh my god, that was a reaction. It's just like, oh, Aston Martin. Oh, Aston Martin's crashed. That must be Stroll. It's Alonso.
Yeah, Alonso just crashed much later in the corner. Most people crash going in. He crashed exiting the corner.
He did the Albon special.
Yeah, it was later than Albon's, but Norris was absolutely fine, which is a hell of a lot more than he probably would have been less than a year ago. So Max Verstappen gave it the old college try, though, in a Red Bull, which is quick. Certainly as quick on fresh tires, but can't keep its tires under it like the McLaren can, because nothing could. We'll delve into the pace deltas a little bit later, but got a little bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card.
A little
with
bit.
The Alonso crash, and then shadowed Norris all the way home when he probably wasn't in a car to do so, and didn't let him get any further out. Once he got into DRS range, Lando couldn't shake him off. It was about about just under 9/10 at the line.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this is Red Bull was despondent, I think, by the time they got to Australia. I think, like, going after testing, Verstappen told the Dutch media at Viaplay that he didn't think they had a real shot at winning in Australia. By the time they got into the country, they were happy to take a podium, was what the Red Bull camp was basically saying. Max still got second, and he was less than a second off the win. They'll take it.
He made McLaren fight for a win when they really didn't have a right to. I mean, on average, taking out outlier laps and judging it from a mix of all the conditions, Max is about 0.6 of a second off, which is a pretty healthy gap from McLaren to everyone else. So, and that was the closest. That was the only car within a second on average. So still Max giving it the old college try, still making the everyone work for everything against him.
And yeah, it's one of these things where we think, or most of the teams think, McLaren have got a couple attempts on the field right now. It might be a case of Max surviving and taking every point he can until the field gets to the Spanish Grand Prix in June and seeing where the flexi wing test comes into play.
Yeah, that's
a fun fact. So, the rear wing test was supposed to come in for that. Yeah. The FIA watched the Australian Grand Prix and said, nah, we're doing it for China.
It's coming. Yeah, they were moving that shit up.
They tested Lando Norris's rear wing four times after the race. It passed each time. Like, no, we are redesigning the test because this cannot stand.
It's like we know something dodgy's going on here, but we're not quite sure what it is. So we're going to sting it this way.
Well, I know exactly what it is. The way the rule works with the way the FIA can judge this, by definition, if it passes the deflection test, it's legal. But the FIA has the power to redefine what that deflection test is anytime they want.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's how the rule is written. So the cars, like McLaren's car, was fully legal this weekend. In the words of Ray Evernham and Mr. France, it might not be tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Please don't ever bring this car back.
I love the T-Rex. But yeah, and it's not just the couple of tenths. What it is that the McLaren is only maybe a little faster than the Red Bull and the Ferrari over one lap. But much like the 2023 Red Bull, once they dig into the tires, McLaren just fucks off up the road. They had little to no tire degradation for most of that first stint, and Max melted his front tires trying to, and successfully keeping pace with them, but he goosed his tires doing it.
Yeah, and that's what led to him making a mistake in the back end of that stint. It let Piastri...
He was almost 20 seconds off of the McLarens by the end of that cycle on the slick intermediates was what they were by that point.
Yeah, that's what opened the door for Piastri to overtake him, and then that was it. We thought the lead battle was going to be over right there and then for Max, and again, the safety car was a get out of jail free for him to get him back into play. And again, Max still very nearly stole one on the way out, because that's what Max Verstappen does. He is relentless. He is fine. He's doing what a lot of people love in their Grand Prix driving, which is seeing people scrap it and seeing guys basically, Max is an alchemist trying to get something out of nothing.
He will rip any maximum available result out of a given car, out of a given track on a given weekend. He only failed to do that really once or twice last year on a couple of, frankly, really shitty days. For him, Hungary was awful. Mexico was awful. Otherwise, there wasn't a lot more in it overall. And he's back to that. Despite McLaren's advantage, he's not going to let them get this one easy. Meanwhile, in third place and completely anonymous, Mr. George Russell. And,
I love the meme that's going around that's saying, general. Like, oh, George Russell does nothing, finishes on the podium. Like, if you watch that race that weekend, he did a lot more than nothing.
Not that we saw it, because we saw his car on screen for maybe like 40 seconds across the whole weekend.
Yeah, he was just there.
Sometimes being there is enough, man, especially in a race like this where you have veterans like Carlos Sainz Jr. chucking their cars in the first lap. And the aforementioned Fernando Alonso. That's not nothing.
Fernando Alonso, the most experienced man in the field, over 400 Grand Prix to his name, stacked it at turn six. Carlos Sainz, I believe, is now the third most experienced driver in the field. Lost it under a safety car and put it in the wall. And Carlos Sainz is somehow not the most embarrassing crash we've had this weekend. More on that later. Russell ended up third. While being extremely quiet, his teammate Kimi Antonelli was a lot more lively, and he ended up fourth.
It was a great but messy drive, and that's kind of endearing in its own way, isn't it?
Yeah. This was about the worst possible race you could be thrown into if you were a rookie. Fully dry qualifying session, followed up by massive wet race. You know, heavy intermediate usage, changeable conditions, low grip. Australia is already an outlier round as it is. And then, you know, chuck in rain there for the first time, I want to say, since 2003 for a Grand Prix.
Heavy rain. 2010 was the legendary 2010 race with the tires that were melting in the odd conditions.
How about a four-stopper?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, about the worst conditions you could possibly ask for. Some rookies dealt with it fine. Some rookies dealt with it not so fine. Some rookies' cars didn't roll with it so fine. I believe Bordolello's suspension actually collapse before he just hit
completely
anything.
Completely fail. I saw that. You've seen the replay. His right rear suspension completely collapses before he's even hit the wall. And that ruined his day. What was it?
He was having a
great weekend.
Perfectly fine day. Yeah, he was solid. Sauber in the points after I predicted them to go scoreless on the year.
Bro, I don't know.
Nico Hülkenberg is the top Ferrari powered driver in the
championship. I do not.
I told you.
This is such an outlier result, and I hate everything that the easy-go companies like Stink and Kick stand for, and I cannot wait till they get out of my sport. And I understand that this Sauber team is still functionally derelict until that Audi money kicks in, but you take that result all the way to the bank. I know it's an outlier. I don't give a
literally
shit.
Literally all the way to the bank. Alpine proved to us last year. Alpine proved that one weekend can make your season. And Nico Hülkenberg is still 100% Himalayan.
It's like he never left the team after 2013.
Hülkenberg just scored 50% more points in his first weekend back than all of Kick Sauber managed across 2024. They scored 4 points all of last season. Hulk already has 6. Huge result for Sauber. Huge.
Nico Hülkenberg kicking Lewis Hamilton's ass in a Sauber. It really is 2013 again.
Think about this, though. Alex Albon in fifth. I know he was fifth, and then he was fourth because Antonelli got a time penalty that was overturned on appeal for an unsafe release. But still, either way you slice it, that's Williams's best result in a race that wasn't, you know, a glorified two-lap parade in some time.
It was the best Williams result they've had, barring the mess that was Spa 2021, was Lance Stroll's podium in Baku back in 2017 was the last time Williams had a car finish that high. Just to clarify what RJ was saying, Mercedes lodged a rare successful right to review.
Oh my God, they actually presented new evidence.
They did, because the stewards at the time did not have the roll hoop footage of the unsafe release call that happened to Kimi Antonelli in the pits. Merckx was able to download the footage after the race. It was presented as new evidence, and the students were like, yes, this is new evidence. We will accept this. And it turns out that Antonelli did make sure his car was fully clear of Nico Hülkenberg before he got to the fast lane. And you can even see in the footage, he checks his mirror to make sure he's fully clear of Hülkenberg before that happens. The unsafe release was reversed. Antonelli gets his 5 seconds back, and that put him ahead of Alex Albon. Don't get me wrong. Stunning result for Antonelli in fourth.
The real deal.
The kid is already the second youngest point scorer in Formula One history. Only Max Verstappen at 17 has scored points at a younger age.
That record.
Best rookie result as well in a season and race debut since Felipe Nasr scored P5 in a Sauber back in 2015.
That's 2/3 of the crown holder, Felipe Nasr, to you.
Yeah, and
damn right,
it was better than Nasr. You'd have to go back to Kevin Magnussen in 2014 in Australia for a debut result that was better. Best since 2014.
And his Sebring result was not his fucking fault.
No, exactly. But Williams has got something here. Like Alex Albon was sensational this weekend.
Williams has something here, but also since this track has been reconfigured, generally Williams does have raw speed here. Hasn't always been the most drivable thing in the world, like we saw in 2023. But Albon is very quick here. Williams is very quick here again. One weekend can make your season, and they cashed in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take your 10 points and get the hell up out of here. Lance Stroll just keeping his nose dry, got in P6. Yeah,
if we're going to shit on Alonso for throwing his car up the road, we need to give Lance Stroll his deserved flowers, because again, it's not that he is entirely incapable of doing this that's frustrating. It's the fact that it's never consistently like this. If you had more weekends like this, we wouldn't be so frustrated with Lance Stroll a lot of the time, like we are with Ferrari.
All right. Should we throw it back?
Yeah, tear the Band-Aid
off. A few years ago. I think, RJ, I think you and I should grab the lawn chairs. crack open a Mexican Coca-Cola and let Dre talk for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, but mine's almost, mine's finished.
Damn. I gotta go into the garage and get some more. So, it's like the last week that it's cold enough to grab it right out of the garage.
So you want me to talk about Ferrari here, right? Yeah, I mean, Ferrari's weekend was a piss missile of disappointment. Yeah, no,
those words have never been said in that order before. I'm quite sure of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, it's like you've tried to, I mean, the hype train going into this season was like trying to build a 50-foot jizz cannon in your back garden. You've invited all your friends.
That's Ferrari's hat and shorts
collection. No, that's the end result of their hat and shorts collection, pal.
And by the time it was all over, you've invited all your family and friends around for the big launch. And what's happened here is that you've launched the cannon, it's dropped into the ground, and all you've got is just a puddle of spunk on the ground. That's how bad this opening weekend was. Like, all the talk was, hey, Ferrari's pace is good, it's decent, they didn't look terrible in testing. In qualifying, they were awful. Hamilton is still struggling to get to grips with the new car. He was 0.8 off the pace. Leclerc didn't get a final run, which was bad enough as it is. So they locked out row four, 7th and 8th, which was not great. And then, according to Cam's Delta sheet, Charles Leclerc, the faster of the two Ferraris, was 1.8 seconds a lap behind the McLarens.
It's not great.
The car,
like the raw cope through the weekend was, oh, Ferrari set the car up for the wet. No, actually, I think they wished they set it up for the wet. They annihilated their tires in about half a lap in Q3 in qualifying. They were quick as hell for a sector and a half.
Yeah.
And then they would just fall off a cliff in sector three. Same with the Red Bull, in fairness. But excluding big outlier laps and leveraging about 50% of the laps in the race, so you get all conditions, Charles Leclerc was 1.79 seconds a lap off of Lando Norris. Sure, Lewis Hamilton was 2.18 seconds a lap off.
Yeah, but Lewis Hamilton led by being one of the last to pit for tires in that closing.
Well, why did that happen?
Because Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari had a breakthrough moment, their first race together in this relationship. We had the first disconnect between what Lewis Hamilton wants to do on strategy and what the Ferrari pit wall wants to do on strategy.
We ticked every box. We had the first hype train for Hamilton. We had the first Spinola in qualifying in Q2 when Hamilton spun the car. And we've already got radio dissension because Bono is still over at Mercedes now as Kimi Antonelli's race engineer. We got, and
can I end there for a second? The whiplash of hearing Bono speak and then Antonelli speak.
Right.
Like, hit me in my chest.
No, we've had 12 years of this shit, and now all of a sudden we've had to get used to
it. So wrong.
It doesn't sound right. And we had two legendary radio moments of Hamilton saying, leave me to it, four times on the radio with Adame, his new race engineer, getting used to shit. Also, side note, as a quick tangent here, you know how weird it was hearing Gary Gannon for Aston Martin?
Yeah, dog.
By the way?
Yeah. This is a new era for Formula One. The post Lewis Mercedes era has hit across the whole grid.
Right. And then Charles Leclerc in the,
oh my god,
I have a huge leak in my seat. My whole seat is wet. And then
it's full of water. Must be the water. Let's add that to the words of wisdom. yes, this floor is made of floor.
This would be funnier. This would be funnier if it wasn't such a struggle fest, dog. Otherwise, you're just flashing in here with worse dad jokes than Christopher Hardy.
Team LH on Twitter got the entire Sebastian Vettel fan experience in two stints.
And this was before they released the Jizz merch.
Yes, the Jizz merch. The cum hat is definitely It definitely tells others, I'm going to steal this from Jalopnik, that I let others finish first.
That should have been King's byline. He let Andy Kalmowitz's co-worker take that for him.
They're not paying Andy enough over at Jalopnik. Oh, my God.
They're not paying King enough over there. Look at the lines he's coming up with here. But
honestly, like, Ferrari were... This is their worst start to a season on raw speed and points gained since 2009, the legendary red sled that was the F60.
No. I'm going to hammer this home even further. With his P10 finish, Lewis Hamilton has had the worst debut for Ferrari in a race since the 2009 European Grand Prix and the second worst of the 21st century alongside... Who, gentlemen?
2009? Is that Giancarlo Fisichella?
No, it isn't. It's Luca.
It's Luca Badoer.
Brando's
papa. Shout out to all the Formula 2 races that were sacrificed due to this terrible weather.
Look, Ferrari were fucking cheeks this weekend.
Two of the goats of my generation on the same stat line. Who'd have thunk?
The bigger concern is, like I talked about with Williams, Ferrari have generally been quite excellent here since the reconfigure in the new gen cars. Dominated in 22, even before Max's car broke. Weren't that far off in 23, and then dominated in 2024 when Max's car broke. This year, they were soundly destroyed.
They better hope.
They weren't even... At times, they weren't even the fourth fastest team, and that is really, really concerning. If we get to Bahrain and Ferrari's cheeks like this, pack it up and come back next year, because they're always good in Bahrain.
Not to break into the narcotic stash for a bit, and we're bringing back old bits en masse, because we have to. It's kind of our bit thing, but it's just like, China's a radically different track to Australia is now.
Massive.
China, Ferrari were radically not very good last year in China as well. I mean, McLaren were good and their car was bad. That was before their major B-spec car last year. So that could be concerning for the grid. But also last year, Red Bull, like Max won that race with one hand on a steering wheel. It was easily their best race last year. So I don't know what to expect from China.
Yeah,
they replayed it on Sky Sports F1 this morning. Max won that race by 13 seconds. It was an incredibly casual beating of the field. That's not going to happen this year by the looks of it. So more on that in a bit. But the rookies, we mentioned a lot of, we've mentioned some of them here. We mentioned Antonelli, obviously, for P4. He was the highlight of the rookies because the rest of it was ungood. We talked about Gabriel Bortoleto, who was genuinely solid until his suspension wrecked and took him out. But he had a pretty good opening weekend beyond that. Not his fault that his car self-destructed on him. But one stood out, and that was Isaac Hadjer. And I feel really bad for the kid because he was the best rookie qualifier out there. He was P11. He was less than 0.2 away from making Q3. Quickest of all the rookies out there, really solid, and then unfortunately he spins out on the formation lap at turn one, gets a tank slapper, can't save it, and his day is done before the race has even started. The rare DNS. And well, it was a moment that was highlighted on screen mostly by the sympathetic and comforting hug that Lewis Hamilton's father, Anthony, gave him in the paddock as he was making his way back. And it's generated a lot of headlines and a lot of talk. Helmut Marko has since thrown in his 2 cents. Once again, nobody asked for and said it was embarrassing that that Hadjer had, quote, a crying show, even though we have no evidence that he actually cried under his helmet. But, you know, emotions, they're for the weak, apparently. Now, I want to talk about this for a couple of minutes, if you don't mind, gentlemen, because I didn't expect
cracking open another Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I wrote about this on the website as I record this today on March 19th, and I didn't expect it to get the reaction that it did. I won't repeat that article verbatim. If you really want to read it, you can at motorsport101.com. Apparently some of the best shit I've ever done. I'll let you to be the judge of that. That's not for me to say. But I can't stand this. In many ways, the way we discuss Formula One on social media and on the internet is bad enough at the best of times. I've talked many a time about the footballization of Formula One and how we discuss people is very... It lacks compassion. It lacks empathy. We are very quick to bury people. We overreact. We are quick to fire up the memes and destroy people. We like to break down what we've built up over our time on the internet. And I find it sad, alarming, and very reflective of modern times that an 80-year-old curmudgeon in Helmut Marko, who, need I remind you, got an FIA code of conduct less than 2 years ago for racist comments about Sergio Perez, is out here telling the world that emotions are a sign of weakness. And I can't stand that that's a thing, because this is exactly why so many men are being manipulated and vulnerable men have been taken advantage of in the world, because they've been beaten into from the time they're children that emotions make you weak. They do not. I will stress this from now until the end of time. Emotions are what makes us human. They are not a weakness. Vulnerability is good. It makes you relatable. It makes you human. It's a form of communication and understanding that we as human beings are blessed to be able to have. And I said it on Instagram and I will say it again here. I would rather have the person that cares too much 1,000 times more than the person who doesn't care enough. I salute Anthony Hamilton, a man, you know, whose son, Lewis, is Isaac's hero. Lewis has been long enough on Formula One now that he's literally inspired a new generation of racing drivers. We are so fortunate and lucky that we have figures like Lewis in this sport that are able to do that with the next generation of racing driver. And I need to point out how important it is that the person that put this arm around Isaac Hadjar was a black arm. We don't have very many people of color in this paddock at all. It's the Hamilton family, Lawrence Barreto, and not much else. And that is tragic that we are still in that position in 2025. And take it from me, as a black person, we... even more than white people, have it beaten into us from the time we're children to hide, to hold our emotions down. Our reactions are often on trial. So often that we can't react, we can't get angry, because we're stereotyped as the people out there that lose their rag or get angry at everything. We're not allowed to do that. We have to be the disciplined ones. We have to be the bigger people and rise above it. Anthony Hamilton is a man who knows struggle. This is a man who gave up his high-paying job in IT, took 4 jobs on to make sure Lewis Hamilton could get on that grid. He promised him from the time he was 6, I will support your career as long as you can keep it up in school. And Anthony did it. There's no way he could have known, especially with the way us as black men think. There is no way he was ever 100% fully confident that Lewis was going to turn out the way that he did. Arguably the greatest Formula One driver of all time. A very strong argument you can make. The transcendent star that Formula One has always begged to have. More than Schumacher, more than Senna, more than Prost, more than anyone has ever come before it. We are so fortunate, and it sucks that once again it comes down to the black figures in this sport to lead the charge when it comes to compassion and empathy, when we're the ones that often have to go through so much more just to get to that point. It's infinitely frustrating that What it's great, obviously. Let me re-clarify my point. It's great that Anthony did this. I'm not criticizing Anthony at all. I need to just make that absolutely clear. What he did was wonderful, and I wish there was more compassion and empathy in this sport for the, especially for people like Isaac, who had about as horrible a nightmare first race as you could ever wish to have. But I wish more people were there to amplify the black voices in this space and in this community. And not just me. There are plenty of more out there that have got stories to tell like mine. And if you want more on that, you can go on the website and read it for yourself. I'm not going to make this a pity party about me on this pod right now. But I would highly recommend giving it a couple of minutes of your time if you want to know a little bit more about me and why certain black men are wired the way that they are. But it is so frustrating that Helmut Marko has brought out the best and the worst of how this sport is covered once again. Gentlemen, I'm done. Thank you for holding back for a couple of minutes there for me. I had to get that off my chest.
I had to let this man cook. I do recommend everyone go read Dre's piece, because it is...
It's real.
It's some of the best stuff that has been put up on the website, and
it's genuinely real.
I mean, and it's real. And I'll say this to Helmut Marko: if you're just going to sit here not nurturing your talent, you're not really going to get very far. Talk about emotions are a weakness. Who gets more emotional when shit goes wrong than Max Verstappen?
And this is always how he's operated as the head of the Red Bull Junior team for like 20 some odd years. That man ain't changing.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, I don't expect him
to. Is this a good point?
Anyone expecting him to is throwing faith down
the hole. Is this a good time to launch?
One last point on that. He's very fortunate, Helmut Marko, that he's had the good fortune to land two drivers that weren't even really Red Bull prospects en route to the huge amounts of success that Red Bull has had in their 20 years of existence. Sebastian Vettel wasn't really a Red Bull guy.
He's a BMW boy.
He was a BMW guy that they stole on the way in and nurtured him into four world champions and four constructors titles. Max Verstappen was not really a Red Bull guy. They poached him straight out of karting and put him straight in an F1 car at 16 years of age. I mean, he's barely a Red Bull guy at all in that sense. And yet again, Max has carried them to four world titles, drivers-wise, and three more in the constructors. That, like, the majority of Red Bull's success leans on the back of two all-time greats.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of bodies underneath those two dudes of drivers and careers they've altered, ruined, and wrecked as a direct result of their mismanagement.
Somewhere in the was like Daniel Ricciardo and, like, I guess, Sainz and Gasly, if you count what they did afterwards. Is this where we launch into the fact that Liam Lawson had a bad weekend? I know he's not a rookie, but
there's not even a lot to really talk about with Liam Lawson's weekend. They had divergent specs on the cars. He was running the old front wing. Car didn't look particularly easy to drive. He had an issue in the air system. If you don't know, F1 cars use pneumatic valve springs, and he had an issue with that in FP3, got no low fuel running. Jack shit happened in qualifying. The race was a disaster. I wasn't expecting much from Liam, and I still didn't get what I was expecting. No, he was never going to be set up for very much success with losing the time he did. In addition to the fact that we're asking the guy who summarily failed to put away Yuki Tsunoda to go up against Max Verstappen.
What the hell happened to Haas this offseason? They showed up to their first race weekend looking bad. And again, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt this one weekend that maybe at China won't be so bad. What I will say is that, yes, Oliver Bearman had a bad race, but I've seen comparisons comparing him out to Nasty Mazepin, and I'm just going to say, if you're making those comparisons, that is an extreme lack of ball knowledge. That is an inverse ball knowledge.
Ollie Bearman scored points.
Oliver Bearman scored points in this Haas setup, and he was Ferrari. You don't know ball.
I'd like to remind everybody that Nikita Mazepin's debut for Haas lasted 800 meters. at least Ollie Bearman brought the car home in unspeakably bad conditions. Like, it was...
And that's just before you get to the rain, because that car was a pile of junk here.
Esteban Ocon's one of the best drivers in Formula 1, and he was nowhere all weekend, back of the field, stone dead last. Haas looked awful this weekend. Awful.
I'm a little bit concerned that Haas spent most of their preseason not doing any low fuel running, really. It showed, it showed in qualifying, showed in the race. They reeked of a team that fundamentally does not understand their own car. A classic problem at Haas.
I was about to say.
We got 1 year break from, and it feels like we're right back.
I was about to say, if this was good for Steiner, we would have buried him for that first weekend if Haas did that now. Ayuka Matsu's got questions for the first time as team principal of Haas, because I don't know what happened in the offseason, but they've gone from arguably the sixth best team in Formula One and challenging for a top five berth to being stone dead last in one offseason. What happened?
That's the thing. This is his first test of real adversity since he took that job. It's been an upward trajectory since, and now it's come down a bit. How they respond, that's going to be the telling thing as the season progresses. And then there's Jack Doohan, who is really not helping his cause in things.
Oh.
That is about the worst thing that you could do. That could have happened to you in a time where we know the guy who's putting pressure to get your seat soon, and potentially sooner than we think.
Jack, wasn't great, Bob.
Jack Doohan's debut lasted 5 corners. And he, again,
not even, it lasted 2.
No, he got to sector 2. Just
did he?
Yeah.
I thought he crashed on the second straight.
Wow.
How quick he crashed. I don't know where on the first lap he crashed.
Exactly. I mean, again, it's a shame because he was actually decent in qualifying. Yeah. He was matching Gasly for pace until his final run. I mean, he had to go hard in his second run because his first one was taken away for track limits. And then in his second run, his run was ruined by Lewis Hamilton's spin. Which was unfortunate. He tried to finish it, but it was never going to make Q3 as a result, and it was kind of a janky session. But there was pictures on social media of Jack Doohan shaking hands with Briatore saying, good job, Rook, and then a day later, he wrecks it in the first sector of the first lap. Jack, you're not helping, buddy. You're already on thin ice, and now you've had a nightmare first round.
You better blow the doors off everybody in China. Otherwise, they might pull the cord sooner.
We saw the video on F1's YouTube channel of a behind the scenes of their intro recording for the year. They recorded a lightbox segment with Franco Colapinto, even though they knew he wasn't going to be on the grid.
They know.
Well, they also recorded some stuff with Valtteri Bottas. So you never know.
just in case. That I think just about covers all the rookies, and not the best first weekend, I think it's fair to say.
Being a rookie's hard
for a number of them. As we said, Bortoleto was having a really good weekend until the entire right rear of his car fell off.
Being a rookie is hard for some.
Yeah. My Bortoleto made Q2 and out-qualified Nico Hülkenberg and knocked him out in round 1. And that was a really, really solid qualifying session. And then his race pace was fine, didn't put a foot wrong, and then his car just collapsed. Rough one for Bortoleto. A shame. Again, the people who you talk to in the paddock who know wheel have all said the same thing, that Bortoleto is a really solid pair of hands. It's just, I'm just not sure he's going to get the car to be able to show it in the long run. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But that's just about it for us on this F1 podcast on the Australian Grand Prix. It's back-to-back F1 races. It's the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend. It is a sprint weekend as well, the first sprint of the year. And it's already going down and interesting in China. We've had freight delays again. So teams are allowed to break curfew early because, again, the tires are on delay getting to China. And we found out today the whole track's been resurfaced. So that's going to be interesting.
Great. You know, Ferrari weren't affected by the freight delay. This is where their fight back begins.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Sure.
And as Emma quite rightly puts in the chat, we have women, because the F1 Academy will be making their debut for the 2025 season in China. I wonder if Nikki Shields will be on commentary again telling us, you know, isn't it great how, well, isn't women great? They're just great, aren't they?
Isn't Dorian fantastic, honestly? Nothing to report on the junior stuff. It was wet. It was miserable. We had an F2 race canceled. I mean, the one guy I actually wanted to watch, I couldn't watch.
Brutal. Yeah. F2 was completely, the sprint race was fine. But the feature race was rained out because of how heavy the rain was. It was just too dangerous. And as a result, that was it. We didn't get an F2 feature race on this one. The sprint was won by Joshua Dirksen, who's continuing his fine run of form from the back of last year, slipping Mechachrome $20 for the good engines.
Do you any of you comprehend the level of rant I'm going to go on if Mechachrome gets the tender for the new LMP2 at powertrain?
That's gonna be a future new problem.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a future everyone using one of those engines problem.
Because of the winners of the sprint, Joshua Dirksen, Leonardo Fornaroli, and Luke Browning is your top three in the standings right now, because we didn't have a feature race. Isn't that just fucking crazy?
Luke Browning's legit. I don't know if that's I don't know if that's just UK bias or something, but like, Luke Browning's legit.
Yeah. F3 was fine. Again, sprint race was a bit messy. Santiago Ramos won the sprint, and that one ahead of Martin Estenshorn and Roman Belinsky. Poland's first ever Formula 3 podium, so congrats to them. In the feature race, Rafael Camara dominated the whole field. That was a beating by Rafael Camara.
There was a drought of Brazilian talent in F1 for a while. I have a feeling that might not last for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Rafael Camara looked good out there in like perfectly handled restarts in terrible conditions, had a great pace, pulled away from the field, won cleanly from Noah Stromstead and Teofil Knoll in the top three. So keep an eye on that one as well. As said, Chinese Grand Prix this weekend, sprint weekend, of course, as well, and a newly resurfaced track. So there's bound to be some funky shit that will go down over the course of the weekend. Stay tuned for that. We'll be back to review that next week. I hope you guys look forward to that one. Our MotoGP review is next up here on Motorsport 101, the Grand Prix of Argentina, and another bout of Our Bikes. And so looking forward to that one. Our Bikes, indeed. Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connor. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
We all just beat the gritty Haas.
You just beat gravel.